Okay, yesterday we left off at the bottom of Yud Amud Bet with the fact that machlok between Rabbi Yehuda and the Chachamim and the Mishnah is not about the first three periods of time when you can do bedikah. Gemara at first suggested that Rabbi Yehuda believes you have to do three bedikot, and the Chachamim say you can choose one out of those three. Obviously, the best time is on the night of the 14th and the morning of the 14th, and then b'shata biur, according to Rashi, according to Tosafot, Shatis or Chametz. But then the Gemara concluded that Rabbi Yehuda doesn't argue in that case. Rabbi Yehuda and the Chachamim both agree that you can pick out of those three. You do one out of those three, you do the bedikah. So what is the machloket about? Gemara said the machloket is after this man Isur Chametz. Do you do bedikah or you don't do bedikah? Chachamim say you do bedikah after this man Isur Chametz. Whereas Rabbi Yehuda believes that after Zman Isur Chametz, you don't do bedikah because we're gozer. The possibility that he might come and eat from it. Now the Gemara says at the bottom of Daf Yud, is that really true? Do we really worry about this? Umi gazar Rabbi Yehuda dilma ate lemeichel minei. Do we really worry about the fact that someone's going to come and eat from this object? Vatanan. Rabbi Mishnah mishakarev homer. From the point of the time that the omer is brought, yotzim umotzim shukei Yerushalayim shem leim kemach vekali shelo bertzon chachamim. They go out and they find the entire marketplace full of flour and roasted kernels shelo bertzon chachamim. Against what the Chachamim want, Divrei Rabbi Meir. So Rabbi Meir says, I don't understand. There's a requirement that you're not allowed to be osek in sirat or taking anything, any grain or anything like that, because you might eat from it. What's the problem? The omer, bringing of the omer, is what's matir chadash. Matir, the new grain to be eaten. If you get engaged with the new grain beforehand, what are we afraid? That you're going to eat from it. You're going to utilize it before the omer. So Rabbi Meir says you can't do that. On the other hand, Rabbi Yehuda Omer Britzon Chachamim Ayosim. It's perfectly fine. Rabbi Yehuda says there's no problem. They did this with the permission of the Chachamim. Velo Gazar, Rabbi Yehuda Dilma'at Lemeichel Minei. And Rabbi Yehuda never raises the possibility that you might eat from it, which you have the same problem here. Eating from Chametz and eating from Chadash are both Asurim. Yet, when it comes to Chametz, Rabbi Yehuda won't let you engage with the Chametz because maybe you'll come to eat it. Yet, when it comes to Chadash, he says, go ahead and you can engage with it. And we don't worry about the fact that you might come to eat it. Amar Rovo or Amar Rabo, shiny Chadash. Chadash is different. Mitoch shelo heitartelo ele adei kituf hu zachur. Rovo says that the answer is that the Chachamim, when they were matir you to work with Chadash, was only through a unconventional way. That means that when you go to pick it, you can't harvest it with a sickle or a scythe. You have to harvest it by picking it by fingers, by hand. And so therefore, if a person does it in an unusual manner, they'll know that they can't engage with this chadash because their whole interaction with it is done in a unusual manner. So Amar Le Abaye, Tinach Vishat Ketifa. That works great for the picking part of it, or the harvesting part of it. Tchina V'har Kada. What about the next stages? Here we're talking about that they found in the Shukei Yerushalayim that it's already at the point where it's flour. That means that they also ground it. That means that they also sifted it. So, Maika the Maymar, what's going over there? Mar says, Adokasha, that we can also deal with. Tchina berechaya diad. The grinding or the milling of the grain is done in a hand mill, not in a water mill, not in an animal driven mill. And Harkada, the sifting is done agav nafet. It's done on the back of the sieve. You turn it upside down and you do it in a different manner. So therefore, we end up with a situation in which your whole mindset in engaging with this chadash is in a way that is a shinoi. And because it's a shinoi, therefore we allow you to do it without worrying about the fact that you might come to eat it. Chametz, you're engaging the chametz like you always engage with the chametz, and therefore we worry about you coming to eat it. That's the solution that Rava suggests. Elahad etnan, what are you going to do with this Mishnah? Kutzrim beit ha-shlachim v'shiba amakim aval lo gochim. Katsira in general, or harvesting in general, the pasuk, Rashi points out, says in one place that you can be kotzer, and then the omer is matir, that which you harvested already to be mutar to eat. And in another place, the pasuk sounds like the omer should be reshit kitzirchem, the first thing that is harvested. How do we reconcile between those two psukim? The answer is depends. If it's from a field from which you could have brought the omer, then there's a requirement of Rishit Kitzirchem will be for the Omer, that you may not harvest the field from which the Omer could be brought. On the other hand, if it's a field from which the Omer could not be brought, then there's no restriction of doing Kitzirah, of harvesting prior to the Omer. So here you have an example of Beit HaShlachim, which is an irrigated field, and Sheba Makim are in the valleys, which were lower quality produce, lower quality grain. And therefore, the Omer was not brought from these areas. It's Mishnah Menachot. Mishnah Menachot says that they're not brought from these areas. So since they're not brought from these areas, we allow you to be kotzer. We allow you to harvest those areas. Avalok gudshim. We don't allow you to do the next part of the process of gdisha is piling it up. As Tosafot points out over here, there's a difference. Tzira involves hefseid. If you don't harvest the grain at the right time, you're going to lose it. So the chamim there were willing to be matir the tzira in order to avoid that loss. So in order to avoid the loss, they say, go ahead and do the ktzira in these locations where it's not a problem for the ktzirat omer. Of a gdisha, where already there's no issue of hefsed anymore, there they already said, okay, don't do that prior to the omer being brought. But what you see from here is interesting. You have a case where you have ktzira that's done in a normal manner. We're not talking about kituf. We're not talking about picking it by hand. We're talking about ktzira, harvesting with a sickle aside. And it's totally mutar prior to the bringing of the omer. So here you're engaging in the item in a normal manner without any shinoi, and yet we're not saying that you worry about you're going to come to eat it. We say that it's totally fine to engage in the chadash in this manner. Vukim no, and over there we establish that it's Kirab Yehuda. Who is the author of that position in that Mishnah is Rabbi Yehuda. So Ma'ika the Meimar, what are you going to say in that case? In that case, you can't use shinoi as a way to deal with chadash because over there you're doing it a normal manner. Now, Tosfot does point out something interesting, which is that b'di'eved, you could bring the omer from these fields. That l'chatchila, you're supposed to bring it from the best fields. B'di'eved, if you bring it from Beit HaShlachim, or you bring it from an amakim, it would work. But despite the fact that it works b'di'eved, we still make that distinction. That fields that are l'chatchila can be brought for the omer, there you may not harvest before the omer. And those fields that b'di'eved you could bring for the omer, that you can harvest before the omer. So it's not simply that you can and cannot bring it. It's you can bring it to Chatchila, and you cannot bring it to Chatchila, and that division's enough to allow us that difference. And Tosfot points out that we have such concepts within Dinei Doraita, that something's like Chatchila and B'di'eved, and it makes a difference. We create such a partition. But what we have a problem now is, Rabbi Yehuda's position is inconsistent. By Chametz, he's worried about a person eating it, because he's engaged with it, and we're gozer because of that. And over here, by Chadash, we're not gozer. Why is that? So Elamar Abaye comes up with a solution, which is, Chodosh bidilminei, chametz lo bidilminei. It's an important principle within chametz. We mentioned already the first Tosafot in the Masechta already mentions this. The chametz is different than any other Isur in the Torah. Chadash, to the point of the Havata Omer, it's something that's completely and totally Asur. Your engagement, your interaction with it, is with the underlying assumption that it's Asur. It's never been Mutar. There's no case where you can eat it. And since it's always Asur, you're bidilminei. People keep a certain amount of distance. They keep a certain amount of refrain from engaging with it because of that. Chametz is mutar kol hashana. To the moment before the Isur chametz, that chametz was totally mutar to you. So since chametz is mutar all the time, lo b'dilminei, people are not separated from it. It's an Isur that has a short duration to it. But not only is it a short duration, it's something that's mutar before and mutar afterwards. And so because of that, we have a higher likelihood that if you're engaged with chametz, that you might come to eat it. And therefore, we're going to have a gezerah by chametz, and we're not going to have a gezerah by chadash. And that's how we explain the difference in opinion for Rabbi Yehuda. Amar Rava, Rabbi Yehuda, ad Rabbi Yehuda kasho, Rabbanan, ad Rabbanan lo kasho. Wait, we only think of here that there's a problem in the shita of Rabbi Yehuda. But there's also a problem in the shita of the Rabbanan. So he says, Rabbi Yehuda, ad Rabbi Yehuda lo kasho. Rabbi Yehuda and Rabbi Yehuda is not a question, kiddushanina, as we learned, meaning like Abaye answered now, which is the difference between b'dil minei and lo b'dil minei. The Rabbanan, the Rabbanan, milo kasha. The Rabbanan also have a problem. By chametz, they say, go ahead and do the b'dikat chametz, even though you're engaging with an isur. In chadash, we have by the Baal Pukto of Rabbi Yehuda that we don't let you do anything before the Havata Omer. Why not? Why can't you engage with the or interact with the chadash? We don't worry by chametz that you're going to do something wrong. Why don't we say the same thing by chadash? So Gemara says, that's not a problem. Hu atzmo mechazer alav the surfo, mekel ka'achal minei. So this is something that we said at the end of yesterday's daf, which is that if your whole purpose or if your whole intent here is to search for the chametz and to engage in the chametz in a manner to destroy it, then you're not going to come to eat it. It makes a difference. There's a big difference between bumping into chametz by chance and bumping into chametz because you're searching for it to destroy it. So in the case where you're searching to destroy it, they say, look, in that case, we're not going to be gozer that you have to worry about him eating it because he's engaged in a process of elimination. He's not going to come to eat it. By chadash, that's not the case. When he's engaging it, he's engaging in it to process it. He's not going to try to destroy it. And so for that reason, we say that he can't get engaged with it because we're afraid he'll come to eat it. And that's the difference between chodosh and chametz for the Rabbanon. Rav Ashi amar, Rav Yehuda ad Rav Yehuda lo kasho. So Rav Ashi makes a different suggestion that Rav Yehuda is not a steerer between chametz and chadash, because kemach v'kali itnan. The Mishnah over there says that we're talking about flour and roasted grain, which are not edible items. So it's not a question. Nobody eats flour. Nobody eats kali. So if these are things that are not edible, then there's no reason to be gozer that they might come to eat them, because they're just not edible items. But chametz, you're talking about an edible item. The Gemara says, v'had Rav Ashi bedutahi. Rav Ashi's answer is a joke not to be taken seriously. Hatinach mikali v'elech. That's true once you reach the point where you've roasted them and you dried them out. Mikara ad kali ma'ikala meimar. Until the point that they're dried out, meaning that when you have the soft or the moist kernels, a person could eat them. Meaning that's not necessarily the way that everybody eats them, but people do eat them. They chew on those raw kernels or on the soft or moist kernels, and that's considered to be normal or a normal way to eat them. And because of that, you could eat the chadash. So you're right. Once you reach a certain point in the process, they become inedible. But until you reach that point in the process, they were edible. And so therefore, Rav Ashi's answer is not a good answer, because it only deals with a certain threshold that we cross over. But before that threshold, that problem still exists, and that does not address why Rav Yehuda's opinion is different by chametz than it is by chadash. V'chiteima, if you want to suggest, okay, I'll solve Rav Ashi's problem and say, Adei kituf, kederava. When we're dealing with the early part of the process, he's doing it in a manner that has a shinoi involved with it. So that Gemara says, Elekotzim beit ashlachim v'shubam hakim. So then, what are you going to do with the fact that when it comes to harvesting the irrigated fields and those in the valleys, V'okimnik Rav Yehuda, and we said over there that Rav Yehuda is the author of that Mishnah, Michael the Maymar. What are you going to say in that case? Eled Rav Ashi bedutahi. It's for sure Rav Ashi is not to be taken seriously. That's not a good answer to resolve the inconsistency in Rav Yehuda's position. So now the Gemara now wants to say, okay, we've come up with a principle to deal with Rav Yehuda. Rav Yehuda's principle is bedil minei. If people are separate from it, then we don't worry about it. Lo bedil minei, we do worry about it. And now the Gemara asks, is that really true? Hohecha delo bedil minei. Is that true? Any place where a person is not normally separated from this object, not engaged with this object, mi gozer Rav Yehuda, therefore Rav Yehuda goes there. Vatnan, lo yikov adam shvaret shel beitza, this will be familiar to you, it's from Avi Madlikin, you say it every Friday night. Person should not punch a little hole inside of a shell of an egg, v'yumalena shemen, fill it with oil, v'yidnena b'tzad aner, and then put it next to the lamp, or really on top of the lamp, v'shvodei min atefet, so that it will drip into the lamp. Basically, it's a way to regulate the fuel entering into the lamp, or to give extra fuel to the lamp. The lamp has oil in it, and has a wick in it. Then you light the lamp and it burns the oil that's inside of it. So either if you want to regulate the amount of oil that's inside of it, or you want to have an additional amount of oil come in it, you put this shell on top with a little hole in it, and it drips the oil slowly into the lamp over Shabbat. So that adds additional fuel to the lamp. Now, vafilu hi shel cheres, even if it's made out of earthenware. So the problem with this addition, or this addition on top of the lamp, is what we're afraid of is you're going to take the oil and use it for your salad dressing on Shabbat. What's the problem with taking the oil and using it for your salad dressing? Gemara says that to add oil to a lamp is mavir. To take oil out of a lamp is the equivalent of michabeh, to extinguish the lamp. So since over here you have this drip feed of oil into the lamp, if you were to take from that oil on Shabbat, it would be the equivalent of michabeh. So what we're afraid of is you're going to go take that oil. You're going to say, I need that oil for my salad dressing. You're going to go take that oil and use it, and you'll be in violation of michabeh. Now, that's true if the oil is still usable and edible, but sometimes it's not. For instance, in a case of a cheres, a case where you use an earthenware vessel that's already been used a lot of times, it's already ma'us. It's disgusting. So the oil that you put in there already becomes disgusting, and it's unlikely or almost zero chance that you're going to utilize that for your salad dressing. So there's really no fear that you're going to take the oil out anymore. Nevertheless, we say over here, bilu hi shel cheres. Even if it's out of cheres, we don't allow it. So we are gozer by cheres onto a normal case of shemen that we won't allow you to do this on Shabbat. But Rabbi Yehuda matir. Rabbi Yehuda says it's totally fine. Why does Rabbi Yehuda say that it's fine? Over here is a case, dolo badomine. It's a case where you're not separated from it. Oil you're engaged with all the time. You interact with it all the time. And yet over here, Rabbi Yehuda says, we don't worry about you getting involved with it. If it's in kli cheres, go ahead. You can make such a lamp with the kli cheres on top of it, because we're not afraid you're going to take the oil out of it. On the other hand, if it's oil in a non-kli cheres, Rabbi Yehuda say you can't do it. But yet, Rabbi Yehuda is not gozer and worried about you engaging with the oil Why not? Gemara says, Hota mishum chumra de Shabbat mivdel b'dile. Because of the chumra of the Easter of Shabbat, people are separated from it. You could also argue about muksa. Shabbat has a certain severity, a certain intensity to it, that people are separating. People know they step away from things that are asur on Shabbat. And therefore it has the equivalent status of chametz, that bedil mine, that people separated them. The Gemara says, okay, v'rami Shabbat ad Shabbat. If you think that's Rabbi Yehuda's position with regards to Shabbat, I have a problem. Because I have another position of Rabbi Yehuda in Shabbat that doesn't sound like that. Titania, chevel dli shenifsak. You have a bucket that is used for drawing water. And you have the rope that takes it up and down that snapped, broke. Lo yeh kushro. Don't tie it back on, because then you have a problem with what's called kesher shukayama, you're in violation of an av malocha on Shabbat. Elon vo. What you should do is make a bow. You should make a slip knot on it, which is not a permanent knot, and then you can utilize it, no problem. Yudomer, kore chalav punda, o piskia. That you tie onto it. A punda is a hollow belt, and a piskia is the equivalent of a girdle or some sort of band. So you wrap them around it tightly to hold the rope together. So what it seems from here is that Rabbi Yehuda is afraid of lo yanvenu, that you shouldn't make a bow, you shouldn't make a slip knot, because why shouldn't you make an aniva? Shem yavol lidei kshira. So here Rabbi Yehuda goes there in Shabbat, don't do aniva, don't do a slip knot, don't do a bow, because you might come to a kesher shekayama. So despite the fact that Shabbat and bedil mine, he still goes there. We have kashet Rabbi Yehuda ad Rabbi Yehuda. That's an inconsistency in the position of Rabbi Yehuda. But not only is it inconsistency in the position of Rabbi Yehuda, it's also inconsistency in the position of the Rabbanan. The Rabbanan and the Rabbanan also is a kasha. Because over here, the Rabbanan say it's perfectly fine, make a bow, and then that goes there out to kshira. By the case, in Bamei Madlikin, they say don't put in the kli cheres, because maybe you'll do it without a kli cheres, and you'll take it off. So Gemara says, the Rabbanan lo kasha. For the Rabbanan, that's not a problem. Sheme b'sheme michlaf. Aniva b'kshira lo michlaf. We can differentiate. Shemen, oil and oil, people go get mixed up. People are not going to differentiate between when you put it into a kli cheres and drip it into the lamp, and when you put it into a regular utensil and drip it into the lamp. They're not going to differentiate over there. It's oil here, it's oil there. They're not going to differentiate. So because of that, there goes there. Don't put in kli cheres, because you might come to do it when it's not kli cheres. But over here, in our case, by the bucket that you're drawing the water with, over there, aniva b'kshira lo michlif. People don't mix up bows or slip knots with real knots. Those are different types of securing of a rope. And people aren't going to mix them up. They're totally different ways to engage with the rope. To Rabbi Yehuda, Rabbi Yehuda lo kasha. For Rabbi Yehuda, it's also not a kasha. And that's because, if you remember, we just saw this recently, that Rabbi Yehuda actually has a different opinion than the Chachamim with regards to aniva, which is, Taimid Rabbi Yehuda, la mishum de gazar aniva dukshira. Rabbi Yehuda's reasoning has nothing to do with the fact that he's gozer a slip knot or a bow out to a kesher shokema. Because he believes that aniva is an av malocha. It's not a problem of gzeira. It's a problem that he thinks that that is the malocha of kshira on Shabbat, that aniva qualifies as a kesher, that your chayav is an av malocha for on Shabbat. Therefore, it's a problem. There's no gzeira in that bright, according to Rabbi Yehuda. That is the ikar malocha that you're doing. All right, now the Gemara says, V'rami rabbonon ad rabbonon. Let's at least challenge here the position of the Rabbanon, because that's not. We have a Mishnah in Shabbat. Koshrim dli bepiskia, avalo bechevel. You can tie a bucket with a piskia, with a belt, in order to draw water with it. Avalo bechevel, not with a rope. The difference being that if you tie your belt around it, you're not going to leave it there permanently, because you're going to take your belt back. You want your belt back. So if we allow you to tie it onto this bucket to draw the water with it, we know that you're not going to leave it there permanently. We don't have to worry about it. You tie a rope there, in all likelihood, you're going to leave it there. There's no reason to take the rope off afterwards, and therefore you're going to have a problem. Rabbi Yehuda over here says it's totally mutar. You can do it. Now, chevel demai. What type of rope are we speaking about here? Ilem chevel da'alma. If we're talking about a regular rope, Rabbi Yehuda matir, and Rabbi Yehuda says, no problem. Kesher shokayamo. It's a permanent knot. Why would Rabbi Yehuda ever be matir in that case? Devadai ate levitule. He's definitely going to leave it there. There's no chance that he's going to come and take the rope off afterwards. He makes a perfectly good rope on this bucket to draw the water with. He has no incentive to take the rope off. Abshita de gardi. It must be we were talking about a weaver's rope. A weaver's rope, which is part of his professional wares or something that's unique, something that's more expensive, and therefore the person's not going to leave it there. So even if he used a Hevel Shogari, they were not worried. It's equivalent to a piskia. It's equivalent of a belt that he's not going to leave there. Now, why do Rabbanan say it's a sur then? They say a piskia is okay. Why don't they say Hevel de Gardi is okay? Because Ru Rabbanan, Hevel de Gardi, atu Hevel de Alma. And yet here the Chachamim goes there, a Hevel de Gardi, atu Hevel de Alma. So why, by Aniva, do they not worry about it? The Gemara says in. Hevel bechevel mechlif. When you're talking about a weaver's rope and a regular rope, people will confuse those. They're both ropes. Those are things that you can mix up. Aniva b'kshira lo michlifa. A bow, a slip knot with a knot, people don't confuse. Those are two different methods, two different ways that they function. And therefore, people are not going to mix them up. Now the Gemara says, v'cho hecho dibodo mine lo gozar Rabbi Yehuda. Any case where a person is separated from an object, Rabbi Yehuda does not go there. V'atanya. V'braita in b'chorot. B'chor shachzo dam. He has some sort of blood clot. Blood buildup in there. Afiluhu mate. Even if he's going to die from that blood clot, ain mikizin lo dam. We do not allow you to bloodlet this animal in order to cure the animal. Divi Rabbi Yehuda. But he says we don't allow you to bloodlet at all. Why? We're going to see in a second why, but we're afraid that you're going to make a mum in the animal in order to allow the blood out, or to bloodlet, you'll make a mum. Now, the truth is you could do. There's certain places in the animal you could do it and you will not cause a mum. The other place in the animal where you would cause a mum. And Rabbi Yehuda goes there. In places where there's no mum, or to places where there is a mum. So here it's a case where it's kodashim. We're talking about b'chorot, which are kodashim, that people are dealing mine. And yet, Rabbi Yehuda won't allow you to do any akazat dam. He says, let the animal die. Mimim yakiz uvajli til bo mum. Let him do the hakazat dam, assuming that he does it in a place that he's not matil mum. Where it says, that's not a problem. Hotam, the explanation is, atok shadam bahula mimono. A person is worried about monetary loss. Rabbi says a person in general is worried about his money. He is so worried about his money that he won't have rational decisions, or he won't make rational decisions. And therefore, if we allow him to do hakazat dam in a place where it's not a mum, he'll go ahead and make it and do it in a place where there is a possibility of a mum. So Rabbi Yehuda says we got to get this off the table completely, because if we allow him to do it in one place, he's not going to control himself. He's not going to see any limit to that. And he'll even do it in a place where he's not supposed to do it. Rabbanan Kol Shekein. This is a brilliant insight by the Chachamim. Dilo Sharit Leiklau Oti Lemeivad. If we don't give him a way to deal with this, he's going to do whatever he wants. Meaning that the person wants to solve the problem. He's not going to stand by and watch the animal die. That we know. So now you have a choice. Either let him do everything, or you can limit him. If you give him permission to do it in 90% of the cases, and only 10% of the cases he can't do it, then a person will be rational about it, and he'll deal with it. Even though Adam Bahula Mimono, if you give him in 90% of the places a way to deal with it, and a petach to deal with it, then he'll deal with it. If you say that you can't ever do it, and just gotta watch the animal die, a person's not gonna be able to deal with that, and then they're basically become a free-for-all. They're gonna basically say, I don't care what the Chachamim say, I'm gonna do whatever I want. So here the Chachamim have an insight that Adam Bahula Mamono, there's gonna be no stopping this individual. Since there's no stopping this individual, we have to now control the way that he deals with it. So if we give him a way to do it that it's mutar, then fine, he'll deal with it. If you don't give him any way to deal with it, then he's just gonna ignore us completely and do what he wants. It's interesting, I'll just say this as a sidebar, that the Gemara everywhere else, when it talks about Adam Bahula Mamono, it uses this position of the Chachamim, which is Adam Bahula Mamono, we're always worried about the person acting irrationally, and therefore we have to give him a petach. The only exception to that rule is what we saw in the Gemara in Shabbat by Kol Kitvei, by the case of the Kitvei HaKodesh, or the fire in the house, there over there we say Adam Bahula Mamono, and therefore we don't allow you to go in there on Shabbat to take out the items, because you might extinguish the fire. So it's interesting in Shabbat, Adam Bahula Mamono, Tosafot raises it there in the Gemara in Shabbat, is used differently in that one case than everywhere else. Everywhere else, Adam Bahula Mamono, therefore we give him a way to deal with it. On the other cases, by that one case in Shabbat, we say Adam Bahula Mamono, and everybody, we shut him down. It's interesting, because what the Rabbanan say here is very insightful and makes a lot of sense. It's somewhat akin to Eshet Yifat Tawar. Lo Dibra Torah, Lo Keneged Yetzara. Torah knows that if we don't give you a way to deal with it in a mutar way, they're just going to do what they want. So we have to give people a way to deal with things. And if we give them a way to deal with it when it's mutar, they'll deal with it in the way that's mutar. People are rational when it comes to that. If you block them from doing anything, then they become irrational. So yeah, there are cases like that. But for the Kohen, the b'chor is a significant part of his livelihood. This is what he eats. This is how he makes a living, in a sense. And if you're going to allow his animal to die, he's going to be missing a big part of his parnosa. And so therefore, here we enter the idea of Adam Bahula Mamono. We see that throughout Bechorot, that Kohanim are not rational when it comes to Bechorot, because they have no nemanot when it comes to Bechorot, because they'll put mumim in them in order so they can keep them, and they don't have to put them out on the Bizbeach. And that Kohanim are irrational, again, it's part of their parnosa, and that's why. So they have a different attitude towards Bechorot than we find by any other Kodoshim. Correct. That might have to do with the fact that it's outside the Mikdash. Kohanim Zrizim Heim might only have application within the Mikdash. We discussed that when we discussed what Kohanim Zrizim Heim or why it works. That might be unique to the Mikdash. And since it's outside the Mikdash here, Kohanim may not have that status of Kohanim Zrizim Heim anymore. All right. Umi Aminon, the Rabbi Yehuda, Adam Bahula Mamono. And do we really apply this concept of Adam Bahula Mamono according to Rabbi Yehuda? That's not. Remishna. Rabbi Yehuda, Omer, Ein, the Girsash here should be Mikardin. Ein Mikardin, Ebeima, Biyom Tov. You're not allowed to comb an animal on Yom Tov, because it injures the animal. Aval mikart sefim. You're allowed to comb an animal on Shabbat. Chamim armim, ein mikardin ve'ein mikart sefim. You can't do either type of combing. Betanya, ezu kidur ve'ezu kirtzuf. What's the difference between combing as a kidur and combing with a kirtzuf? Kidur, kitanim vosim chabura. A kidur is a fine-tooth comb with sharp, narrow, thin teeth that causes a wound to the animal. Kirtzuf is gdolim venosim chabura. It's a much coarser, thicker teeth. And therefore, it's a comb that separates out the hair, cleans out the dirt from the animal without causing injury or out causing a chabura to the animal. So the Gemara says, hotam ishavik le mayit. If you leave the animal, it's going to die. So therefore, aminan adam bahula memono. That's why we say a person is bahula memono. And that's why Rabbi Yehuda does something, I guess, even stranger. He makes it completely asur. Hacha, ishavik le tsar ba'amo. Over here, if you restrict the person, then we simply have a problem of tsar. So there, lo amrinin adam bahula mono. Over here, a person will have a much more rational approach to dealing with the issue when we're just talking about the animal being in discomfort and a little bit of pain because of the dirt or whatever's caught in him. So that a person is going to be more rational about it, is going to have less problem with dealing with whatever the chachamim stick out in front of him. And then the Gemara finally asks, Rabbi Yehuda, Maishna gabe chametz de gazar, or Maishna gabe kirtzuf de lo gazar? What's the difference by chametz that Rabbi Yehuda does worry about, doesn't allow you to do b'dikah b'zman ha'yisur? And yet over here, he doesn't say that we worry about kirtzuf atu kidur. We don't stop you doing the coarser, the thicker comb, because of the thinner comb. The Gemara says, no problem, that's lechem b'lechem michlof. Bread with bread gets mixed up. Very interesting. So it's pretty clear from here that their matzah and chametz were not so far apart. Because here the Gemara is saying, lechem b'lechem michlof, they're saying that things get mixed up. Chametz and lechem, that stuff's going to get mixed up. Kidur b'kirtzuf, lo michlof, people don't mix up these combs. They're a totally different type of process, totally different type of comb. And therefore, people are not going to get mixed up. All right, that's the conclusion of the Gemara. There are a number of questions here. One of the questions here with regards to this Gemara is, why is the Gemara in the end asking about, why is Rabbi Yehuda gozer by chametz, and he's not gozer by Shabbat? We already explained before for Rabbi Yehuda that Shabbat bedilimine. People are bedilimine, so what's the problem? Now, you could answer that over here we're allowing him to do one type of comb and not the other type of comb, so he's already engaged in it. So maybe there you can't say that Shabbat bedilimine. But the Gemara already gave that answer of Shabbat bedilimine. It's interesting the Gemara does not entertain that possibility here as well. On top of that, Rabbi Kiva Eger over here says, I do not understand this Gemara whatsoever. He leaves it as a tzarech iyun gadol. He says, even the kidur is only an iser derabanan. And that is because it's not a psik reshe, and it's a davar sheinu mitkavein. You're combing the animal with the fine-tooth comb. The fact that there's a chabura, you cause injury to the animal, is a unintentional consequence of combing the animal. And it's not an absolute or necessary outcome of your combing the animal. So what we have here is Dover She'eno Mitkavein. Now, Dover She'eno Mitkavein is a machloket Rabbi Shimon and Rabbi Yehuda in the Gemara in Shabbat. And over here we're talking according to Rabbi Yehuda. Rabbi Yehuda says it's Asur. But we establish in the Gemara in Shabbat, and he quotes here a number of Tosafot, Rashi, that Rabbi Yehuda thinks that it's only Asur Midrabanan. That Dover She'eno Mitkavein on Shabbat, that is also according to Rabbi Yehuda, is only Asur Midrabanan. And so Rabbi Kiva Eger says a very simple answer for you over here. You know why Rabbi Yehuda isn't gozer by kidur and kitzuf, and why he is gozer by chametz? It's a difference between derabanan and deoraita. The whole problem of kidur over here is an isur derabanan. It's davar she'eno mitkavein. It's only also midrabanan. So now what do you want him to do? Gozer kirtzuf atu kidur? That's a gzeirah like the dene derabanan. He didn't do that. Chametz? There we're talking about isur deoraita. That's why he goes there, no b'tika, because they're dealing with the Issur d'oraita. And therefore, Rav Kivier says, I don't know what the Gemara is after over here, and he said, leaves it as a tzarach yon godol. He says at the end of it, it's very interesting, he says, this thing was bothering me, and then I found in the Gemara in Yoma, that deals with Davar Sheinu Mitkaven and Sikreshe over there, he says that the Tosfot Yishanim over there asked the same question and leaves the Bitzarchi and Gadol. So he says, I'm happy to find that a Rishon also answered the question and left it unanswered, but that this Gemara is very difficult because you can't explain Rabbi Yehuda in this way, and it doesn't make so much sense that the Gemara went after in this way. I told you one issue, which is the issue of Bedilim Minei by Shabbat, even though maybe you can work your way around it. And here, Rabbi Kivyegor also points out the difference between the Rabbanan and the Oraita. All right, so just in conclusion, just to summarize the Gemara here, we have a position that we can explain according to the Rabbanan. The Rabbanan have a position that Gazu Kohecha de Michlef ben b'Shabbat ben Shari Surei, anything you can get confused with, we're going to make a Gzeira. So therefore, Chodosh Lifnei Omer, we're not going to let you do, because that's easily something that you could get mixed up with, something that can get confused. Shfoferet Shel Beitza, that we're also going to worry about. If you put in Klicheres, not Klicheres, we're not going to let you do that, because those are things that can get mixed up. Shem b'Shem and Michlef. Chevel, rope, we're not going to let you put on the rope, even though it's Chevel de Gardi, and you're going to take it off, we don't let you put it on, because Chevel b'Chevel, Michlof. Chametz, why do we allow you to do that? Chametz b'Chametz could be Michlof. Matzah and Chametz you can mix up, as we see in the Gemara. There, the Chachamim have an exception to their rule, because Adam is engaged in being Soreif the Chametz, he's not going to come to eat it. I mean, that his whole purpose in doing the B'dikah at that time is to eliminate the Chametz. You're not going to worry about him eating the Chametz when he's going to eliminate it. So that's an exception to their position. And the other exception to their position is aniva, is the case with the bow or the slipknot, because aniva b'kshira lo michlof. So that explains to you the position of the Chachamim throughout, which is, the position of the Chachamim is that we worry about you mixing things up. The two exceptions to their rule are Chametz, because you're engaged in biur, and the case of aniva, which is a case where aniva b'kshira lo michlof, because it's not a case where you're going to confuse them. That's the position of the Chachamim. Rabbi Yehuda, his position is that he goes there b'chol milei d'lo b'dilei minei. He goes there in any case where a person is not separated from them. Umidei b'dilei minei, in a case where you are separated from them, he's not goes there. Therefore, chametz, he's goes there. He doesn't let you do b'dikah and chametz because it's lo b'dilei minei. Chadosh, people are b'dilei minei. Therefore, there's no gzeir over there. He lets you do everything there. No problems at all. And all those issues by Shabbat, he also says b'dilei minayu. Anything by Shabbat, he says b'dilei minei, and therefore we're not goes there. Shoferet shel beitza, as well as chevel degardi. All those cases, bedila minei, we don't worry about it. What about aniva? The case in Shabbat, bedila minei. That's Rabbi Yehuda the Shitato. That Rabbi Yehuda believes aniva is kshira. It's an av malocha. So you can't be matir that on Shabbat. That's nothing to do with bedila minei. That's a problem of av malocha. And that's why he doesn't allow you to use the slipknot on Shabbat. The last thing we had here was the case of bechor. In the case of bechor, it's a machloket ekronit about how you deal with adam bahula mimono. So yes, it's a case of bedila minei, but it's also a case that Adam Bahula Mimono. And since Adam Bahula Mimono, how do you deal with that? Rabbi Yehuda's position is, Adam Bahula Mimono, get him away from it entirely. We don't let him engage with it at all. Chamim say, Adam Bahula Mimono, we gotta give him a way to deal with it where it's mutar, and we'll have to restrict the areas that it's restricted. And that's their machloket with regards to Bechor. In the end, the Gemara just mentions that there's a difference between Kirdir and Kirtzuf. We don't see any mix-up over there. So Rabbi Yehuda is consistent by Kidur and Kirtzuf, which is that people are bedilim minei Shabbat, and therefore he's not good there. Okay, next Mishnah. This Mishnah we've mentioned before, we quoted this before in the Gemara, but this is a machlok between Rabbi Meir and Rabbi Yehuda. That's going to take us through the next daf or two. Rabbi Omer, ochlim bo chamesh. You can eat for the entire fifth hour, v'sorfim b'tilat shesh, and you burn it in the beginning of the sixth hour. The sixth hour being the when you reach the point of Isur Dirabanan. The Isur Duraita happens at Tchilat Sheva, the beginning of the seventh hour. If you're looking at a perfect day, you're looking at the equinox, that's a day that runs from 6 in the morning to 6 at night, a 12-hour day where every hour is 60 minutes. That means in the beginning of the 7th hour, which is noontime, the 7th hour begins at noon, that's when the Isur d'oraita kicks in. And that's from what we learned before, the limudim we have, that half the day is asur. So half the day is asur from the beginning of the 7th hour, that's Isur d'oraita. Everybody agrees that from the beginning of the 6th hour, there's an Isur d'rabanan to separate you away from the Isur d'oraita. And that's Tchilat Sheish, or the equivalent of 11 a.m. From 11 a.m. and onward, there's already an Isur Dirabanan. So Rabbi Meir says you can eat the entire fifth hour, which means up until 11 o'clock, from 10 o'clock all the way through to 11 o'clock, from the morning all the way through 11 o'clock, you can eat chametz. Then at the beginning of the sixth hour, we tell you stop, burn your chametz, because you now entered in the area where it's Isur Dirabanan, and that's Isur Achila, Isur Ana. Yudomer, no, it's a staged process. Ochlim kol arba, you can eat the entire fourth hour of the day. That means from 9 till 10 o'clock, all the way through till 10 o'clock you can eat. Vitolin kol chamesh. And then for the fifth hour, you're asur b'achila, but not asur b'hana'a. We stop you from eating it, but you still can get benefit from that. You can feed it to your animals, you can dispense of it, you can do whatever you want with this, you can sell it to an achri. That's during the fifth hour. That's from 10 to 11. Then, v'sorfim b'tchilat shesh. And then from 11 to 12, beginning of the 11th hour, that's the beginning of the Isur derabanan, where you have an Isur achila and ana, then you do sreifa, then you do beer at that point in time. We pass an halacha like Rabbi Yehuda. That's the practice that we have on Erev Pesach, that we go through these stages. That we have an Isur achila, then we have Isur hana, only kick in later. Vodam Rabbi Yehuda. Shtei chalot shel todah psulot. There were these two chalot. In the Mikdash, in general, there is no chametz whatsoever. There are only a couple exceptions to that. One exception is the kvasim that are brought on Shavuot. They come with shtei alechem that are chametz. The only other exception is by the korban todah that comes with 40 loaves. 30 of those loaves are matzah. 10 of those loaves are chametz. So here you have these shtei chalot shel todah that are psulot. The Gemara will deal with how, why they're psulot or what they're doing here. They're psulot. So munuchot agava itzdeba. They used to bring them on Harabait to a place that was high up, a place where people used to look or see all the time. Kozman shemunachot kolam ochlim. As long as both loaves were there, the people knew that it was mutar to eat chametz. Nitla achat. You take away one of the loaves, mean only one loaf is remaining now. Tolim. Lo ochlim velo surfim. You can't eat at that time, but you also don't burn at the time. It's mutar ba'ana, but sur ba'achila. Nitlush tehen. Once both of them are gone, hitchilu kolam sorfim. Then they know they reached the sixth hour, and that's the zman ha-biur. And Rabbi Gamliel Omer, Rabbi Gamliel overlays something basically on the sheet of Rabbi Yehuda, but this idea that chulim nechalim kol arba, chulim can be eaten all the way through the fourth hour. Truma kol chamesh. Truma and kodeshim will have a different din than chulin. Chulin, to stop eating it and let it go to waste, okay. But when it comes to truma and kodeshim, you cannot be mevi otam lidei psul. You can't engender a situation where they become pasul before they really are pasul, or we can't burn them before there really is an isur associated with them. Therefore, the zman achila for truma will extend all the way until there's a real isur. That's the beginning of the sixth hour. And then, sorfim b'tchilat shesh, you burn the beginning of shesh, both chulin, the truma, and the kodeshim, anything that's chametz, you burn at that period of time. So we mentioned before the griz that differentiates, even with the sheet of Rabbi Yehuda, the difference between the fifth hour and the sixth hour. They're both asur, but one of them only involves an Isur Achila, and the sixth hour involves an Isur Achila and Isur Hana. The difference being that the Isur in the fifth hour is an Isur Gavro, and the Isur in the sixth hour is an Isur Chepza. That during the fifth hour, the Chepetz, or the Chametz itself, is Mutar. The Gavro is asur to engage or to eat it, and that's an Isur Gavro. Whereas by the time you reach the sixth hour, it's an Isur Chepza. The Chepetz itself, or Chametz, becomes problematic, and the Chepetz itself is asur, and that's asur ba'ana'a. That's why there's an Isur Hana. That's also why you can't get married with it. You can't use it. It's worthless at that point in time because there's an Isur Chepza. During the fifth hour, there's only an Isur Gavra, not an Isur Chepza. Okay, now Gemara says, Tan Hatam. I have a Mishnah in Sanhedrin with regards to Edut. Echad Omer b'shnayim b'chodesh, v'echad Omer b'shlosha b'chodesh. One of them said that the crime happened on the second day of the month, and the other one said it happened on the third day of the month. Edutan Kayemet. That is not an inconsistent testimony. One of them knew that the previous month was a 30-day month, and one of them didn't know that it was a 30-day of the month. You know, it wasn't like they had calendars in those days. Every month was up for a guess. We didn't know, depending on the Kiddush HaChodesh, depending what happened, they didn't know whether it was a 30-day or 29-day month. So people made assumptions. So one of them knew about it, one didn't know about it, or it could be the other way around. One of them knew about the fact that it was a chaser, and one of them didn't know that it was a chaser. You could have it either way around. But either way, this type of inconsistency is not inconceivable, because it's a possibility that they're both talking about the same day, and they're giving you different dates, because one thinks that the previous month was 30 days, and one thinks the previous month was 29 days. Right, if we reach a point in the month where everybody should know it, or Tosafot says, we don't ever say, oh, well, you know, they're 2 days apart. The guy didn't know that there were two 30-day months in a row. Right? You're never going to say that. He missed two 30-day months. You're never going to say that. Right, so it has to be within the realm of reason that this person might not know about the Ibar HaChodesh. So now the next thing is, Echad Amar B'Shlosha, V'Echad Amar B'Hei. One of them says that it happened on the third day of the month. One of them says it happened on the fifth day of the month. Edutan B'Teila. Over there, we have a problem. Now we have an inconsistent testimony because we can't explain why they're 2 days apart. We can explain why they're 1 day apart. Can't explain why they're 2 days apart. Echad omer b'shtei shot, v'echad omer b'shlosh shot. One of them says the crime happened on the second hour of the day. The other one says it happened at the third hour of the day. Eidutan kayemet. That's not an inconsistent testimony. Echad omer b'shlosh, v'echad omer b'chamesh. One of them says it happened on the third hour. One of them says it happened in the fifth hour. Eidutan b'teila. Their eidut is inconsistent. It's a problematic eidut. Dibi Rabbi Meir. Rabbi Meir the shitato, like in our Mishnah. Over here, Rabbi Meir believes that people can get confused between 1 hour and the other. They don't confuse more than 1 hour. So in a case where it's 2 and 3, we can reconcile the difference in their opinions. We're going to see in a second how Abaye does that. Whereas when it comes to 3 and 5, we can't reconcile their position because there's too much gap. There's too big a gap between them. And therefore, we don't say people make that type of mistake in timekeeping. It's not in the time period when they're watches. Remember, everything is done by estimation or by the sun. So a certain amount of confusion, a certain amount of leeway, you can understand. But when it gets too far apart, it's just not considered to be reasonable anymore. There are difference in opinion as to when the crime happened. That's the position of Rabbi Meir. Rabbi Yehuda Omer, Edutan Kayemet. In that case, the Edut is Kayemet. Echad Omer Chamesh, Vechad Omer Sheva. One of them says 5, one of them says 7. Edutan Teila. Then we have a problem. Shebechamesh Chama B'Mizrach. Because in the fifth hour, the sun is on the east side of the sky. It casts a shadow to the west side. U'B'Sheva. In the seventh hour, Chama B'Marav. The sun's already on the west side. And it casts a shadow to the east side. So there's certain points in time where it's obvious that you can't confuse them. Even if they're 2 hours apart, they cross over a threshold where it's clear that you passed noon. So noon is a type of threshold where it's clear you passed noon and people don't confuse before noon and afternoon. Same thing before sunrise and after sunrise. Even if you're only an hour apart or a small amount apart then, before sunrise and after sunrise, people don't get confused about. Sunrise is a clear demarcation. Same thing with sunset. Same thing with noon. Those are clear demarcations during the day. When we're talking about between those periods of time, over there we have a certain amount of leeway. Rabbi Meir says a smaller leeway. Rabbi Yehuda has a bigger leeway. And that will also explain their position. The reason we're bringing this down is because it's going to explain their positions over here. Why Rabbi Meir only has a buffer of 1 hour, whereas Rabbi Yehuda has a buffer of 2 hours. It's because of the same problem that we have by Eidut about this idea of confusion. Then how did he know it was the second hour? Then you have to question both of their Eidut. How do they know what time it was? Okay, but all right, we'll get to that. The Gemara is going to discuss this. I mean, there's an underlying problem in this Gemara. I'll give it away because it's tomorrow's daf, but I'll give it away already. The underlying problem in this Gemara is, why are we giving everybody the benefit of the doubt here? Okay, let's just say they're inconsistent. Second hour, third hour, second day, third day. Let's just say they have a difference of opinion. And a difference of opinion, we don't have an eidut here, and the guy's off the hook. Why are we trying to reconcile them? That's number one. Number two is, when it comes to Eidut, you have to have them explain it in this manner. You can't explain it for them. Why are we trying to explain it for them? They have to have a consistent Eidut, and we have to check them. And it has to come out that they are consistent. So what is this whole point here? Oh, well, second hour, third, maybe they got confused. Well, we're just going to ask them what they were thinking or how they were thinking about it. So Tosafot comes up with a partial solution over here, and he says that if we can reconcile between them, then we can say that afterwards, when we come and we ask them in more detail and they explain to us what happened, we realize that it's the same time period, but it's just a mistake. It's not considered as if they're bringing new testimony. It's as if their original testimony was this. Once they've been moved too far apart, and then we talk to them about it and we realize that they made a mistake, but since they're so far apart, when they come now to rectify the situation, it's as if they're bringing new testimony. And so there'll be a difference. If we can originally reconcile them, then when they explain it to us that way, then it's as a part of their parcel of their original testimony, it's not a problem. If they get too far apart and we're reinterpreting what they said, and now it's as if there's like a new testimony there, that doesn't work. And so that's what you have to question, you have to ask in all these cases. So all these cases you have to ask is once we reach the point where they're explained to us and we can come to a resolution, then can we look back and say that the original testimony was within the purview of rational? I don't know what they would do in a cloudy day. What's considered to be rational in those situations? Again, I don't know how they could have, any one of them could testify about the time on a cloudy day. Then everything is an estimation. And they should have said that. All right, so now Amar Abaye. Abaye wants to explain the machloket between Rabbi Yehuda and Rabbi Meir. According to Rabbi Meir, people don't make mistakes about time. And according to Rabbi Yehuda, people make a half an hour mistake. The Divrei Meir Adam Tu'ev Lo Klum. Let me explain to you how that happens. Why does Rabbi Meir think, or how do I know from Rabbi Meir's position that people don't make any mistakes? Masa ki hava b'meipik tarte u'mayl tlat. I'll tell you what happened. The crime took place at the end of the second hour, entering into the third hour. V'hadar kamar shtayim, the person who said it was at the second hour, meant b'sof shtayim, at the end of the second hour. V'hadar kamar shalosh, and the one who said it was the third hour, b'tchilat shalosh. He meant the beginning of the third hour. So they both were talking at the exact same time. It's just one of them phrased it as the end of the second, one of them phrased it as the beginning of the third. And that's because the crime took place right at that threshold between the second and third hour. The Divrei Rabbi Yehuda, Adam toeh chatzi sha. According to Rabbi Yehuda, people make a mistake of half an hour. Masik yavo pagla d'arba avo. The crime took place in the middle of the fourth hour, meaning 3.5 hours into the day. V'ayda kama shalosh. The one who said it happened in the third hour, b'sof shalosh. He went the end of the third hour. V'katoyi b'pagla d'shato d'kame. And he made a mistake of a half an hour in front of him. V'ayda kama chamesh. And the one who said the fifth hour, b'tchilat chamesh. He meant the beginning of the fifth hour. V'katoyi b'pagla d'shato d'achorei. And he just is a little bit off by a half an hour behind him, meaning that it happened half an hour before, and he's a half an hour late. So based on that, Rabbi says that Rabbi Meir thinks people don't make any mistakes with time. Rabbi Meir thinks people make a mistake of a half an hour. Ikedam, right? So I'm explaining Rabbi's position like this. I'm Rabbi, Shetim Tzalamar Div Rabbi Meir Adam Tue Mashu. People make a small mistake, tiny mistake. Div Rabbi Yehuda Adam Tue Shabu Mashu. People make a mistake of an hour and a little more. Div Rabbi Meir Adam Tue Mashu Masik Yavu Obisov Shtayim Havu Obitchlet Shalosh. The incident, the crime, happened at the end of the second hour or the beginning of the third hour. Not right at that line. And one of the two edim here, one of the two witnesses, made a little mistake. One who said the end of the second was right on the money. One who said the beginning of the third was off by a little bit. Or vice versa, if it was the other way around. The David Rabbi Yehuda Adam Tueh Sha'au Mashu. People make a mistake by an hour and a little more. Masek Yava, Obisov Shalosh, Obitchilat Chamesh. The incident took place, the crime took place, either at the end of the third hour or the beginning of the fifth hour. One of the two witnesses here is making a mistake of an hour and a little more. The one who said Chamesh meant beginning of Chamesh. So either he's on the money, or it really happened at the end of the third, he's off by an hour and a little more. Or the other way around. If it happened at the end of the third, the one who said the end of the third is on the money, and the one who said beginning of the fifth is off by an hour and a little more. All right, I'm going to stop here, because now we're going to have a bias position taken over to Rava, and Rava is going to reject the bias position over here, and Rava is going to explain it differently. And then that'll come back and reflect on our Mishnah. So we'll stop over here.